Personally, we have a stakeholder named Deb Miller, Secretary of KDOT. Deb has emerged as one of the leaders in national transportation movement, both in Ashdale and the DOE.
I'm happy I'm here too. I had no idea. Not only did I come and get a good cup of coffee, but apparently I've gotten it in my Mississippi Valley Great Coalition commemorative mug. And you have dressed the mess the mug. I'm really impressed. I'm a little nervous when I walk in. I just want to know, is somebody getting married here today? Because, you know, there are so long in the room, you know? Well, I'm glad I got here when I did, because that was an interesting discussion, and honestly, I don't know what the abilities are of our coalition. I don't know what it would mean to have an online permitting system that all the states joined in on, but all I know is it sounds like a great idea to me. And before, you know, we all go out and start making investments, figuring out a way that we can do it so that they're at a minimum tied together, I think sounds like a wonderful idea. So if before this meeting is over, you're creating sort of like an agenda, I think we should work together on it. That sure sounds like a good one. So I like that idea. I didn't hear all of John's presentation, and this actually has nothing to do with what I was going to talk about, but either the permitting issues have really been fascinating to me, and John maybe talked about it, but, you know, we have some of the lowest permanent fees, had some of the lowest permanent fees in the nation, even though we just got legislative authority to raise them. You know, they're not exactly huge permanent fees, even at that, but that last raise in Kansas in 1956, and, you know, you'd just be amazed, even at that. I mean, really, once our bill started moving, it really moved pretty easily. But initially was hung up over the whole notion that, you know, fee permits felt like tax increases and we weren't going to increase taxes. You know, it's just sometimes inexplicable the way all of those issues come together. But I thought what I'd do is talk a little bit about what we've been doing in Kansas, but really more focus on the federal issues and authorization and sort of where all of that fits. You know, I was thinking about this because my notes say, you know, kind of starting off this presentation, this is a critical time for our state and for our nation. And, you know, sometimes I wonder, you know, when isn't it a critical time? Because whatever set of issues we resolve, there's just another new set waiting in the wings. So I don't know, in truth, that it's more critical right now than it's ever been or that it will be again. But it does feel to me in transportation like this is certainly a transitional time, if not a critical time. And I think that over the next number of years, individually in our states, but certainly as a nation, we're going to be faced with, you know, certainly building on where we are, but in a lot of ways almost reinventing what we need to do in transportation. At least to me, it feels like that's what we need to do as a nation if we really want to be successful. And I think that we've got a great opportunity, and it's good that we've got the states working together in a session like this, because what we really need to help do, both for ourselves, quite frankly, but certainly for our elected officials, whether they're at the state level or at the federal level, you know, we've got to keep kind of creating that transportation vision. Over the years, I tend to be how many meetings I have participated in which the notion is that, you know, with the completion of the interstate system, you know, we sort of lost our vision, and, you know, we need a vision so people can understand the importance of transportation. And after years of that discussion, for some reason, feels like we still don't quite have the vision that we feel is resonating with the public, or that we can really use to sell our work to elected officials in Congress. But certainly, if we're going to get the funding that we know we need, we're going to have to be able to clearly articulate why it's important, what it means to our nation, and what we're going to get back as a consequence. And while there are obviously lots of components to transportation, to me, when I think about the national focus and the national need for transportation, I think so much of that revolves around freight movement, because it gets right back to what we're doing in our economy and how we leverage transportation to enhance our economy. So we've got a great role to play here, and this seems to me to be a really good forum in order to start talking about it. And, you know, one of the things that, and the language I've been using a lot in this state, because I believe it, number one, I just think it's so important that I want citizens and our elected officials to understand that we did it. But, you know, I always say, you know, the dollars we have to spend are really precious, important dollars, and we have to spend them in a way that really does leverage our economies. And when we're talking about priorities for our freight system, I think that's really a place where how we choose to spend those dollars is going to make a huge difference in terms of whether or not our economy grows and moves smoothly. So we want to make really good, solid strategic decisions, and in order to make those good, solid strategic decisions, you know, we need a vision we can connect to, and we need processes that can help us move forward in creating those visions. We've been working for some time in our state, first on a long-range transportation plan, as I'm sure many of you all as well. You know, we're not always on quite the same cycle, but because of state TLU and the requirement that long-range plans be updated, many of us probably have been working on them at the same time, but clearly an issue that has emerged over and over again in our discussions is the issue of freight, you know, whether or not we're talking about the rail network or the highway network or drivers' terror of having truck grills in their rearview mirror, or just the whole notion that in order to help enhance our industry, they need improvements in the freight network. But I think that that's one that has clearly risen to the forefront, and many of the things that we do, I think, will have an impact on our freight system, even if we're not thinking of them as specifically targeted to the freight system. And what we are trying to do in Kansas is to come up with that strategic, collaborative, inclusive approach that really helps us make decisions that will enhance the economy of the state. And quite frankly, whether we're talking about a new interchange or widened roadways or, you know, as far as that's concerned, an aviation investment, trying to use a process that keeps it linked together, where we're using good, solid economic analysis so that we can demonstrate back to the public what it is that we're getting from these issues, I think will be a really important issue. And at this time, with the nation still, as near as we can see, deep in a recession, I think it underscores the importance of transportation, and particularly freight movement. I was just meeting with a group of our employees today over here, and one of the questions I got had to do with our turnpike system. You all may not really have seen it if you've not traveled in this area before, but coming from the airport to get to this area of the Metro Kansas City area, you wouldn't necessarily have to have passed through the Kansas Turnpike system, but we do have a turnpike in Kansas. Kansas had committed to building the turnpike prior to the interstate system being established. And so from the beginning, it's carried an interstate designation, which has provided no end of confusion oftentimes we find to out-of-state travelers. People are, I think, more aware of toll roads and their connection to the interstate system, but, you know, for years, you know, you get those outrage letters, you know, I've driven all across the United States, and no one ever charged me to drive on an interstate system. Well, gives you the right, but anyway, I digress. But the point I'm going to make about that is that those systems really are important in terms of how they work together. And one of the things we've seen on our turnpike system because of this recession is the huge decline in truck traffic on it, over 8% this year, which equates to $1 million loss in revenue. And so, you know, this is a system that has, over the years, seen some diminishment in traffic, but quite frankly, never to this extent since it's been put together. And the loss of that traffic has a profound effect in terms of what the turnpike can do, but I think it also underscores, you know, what freight movement means to the economy, and when our economy is in good shape and really roaring to life, we see it through freight movement. I tell people, you know, all of the all of the predictions that many of us have participated in the studies that have been done to talk about this huge growth in attorneys, the tsunami of freight that's coming our way, and I tell citizen groups when I meet with them, you know, we should hope we have that problem, because if we do, it means we've got a really good, robust economy, and while that will provide challenges, I'd much rather have that challenge than the challenge of not much freight moving on our system. But we do anticipate that we're gonna come out of this recession and always be optimists. I think we'll come out of the recession and be healthier. And we're gonna see things moving again, and really making good solid investments in our freight system will be very important at that time. And a lot of those issues I hope we'll see starting to be played out when we get to the authorization of the next federal transportation program. And so what I thought I would do this morning is talk about that issue and kind of set it up and then open it up for some dialogue with whatever time we have left. I had the opportunity about a month ago on behalf of ASHTO to testify before the House Budget Committee, and so I thought what I could do today is share some of those comments with you, because it really lays out from the federal perspective and the perspective of the states through ASHTO what our issues are and what we anticipate. And, you know, the first thing which is so important is before we can even talk to authorization, we have such serious financial issues affecting transportation that are going to have to be dealt with. And that was one of the first things I talked to the House Budget Committee with, is, you know, we have a lot of obstacles. You know, the insolvency of the Highway Trust Fund is just a huge concern, quite frankly, because that's not going to be resolved easily, it does not seem to me. And I'm sure all of you, through your own state DOTs, will recall that last summer, late summer, early fall, all of a sudden we were getting notices from Federal Highway that they may not be able to reimburse us for the full amount of our billing to the federal government for the insolvency. Congress did come to the rescue with an $8 billion transfer from the state general fund that got us back in shape. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that while $8 billion seemed sufficient at the time, it no longer does. And we'll have to see, and Leo may know better than I do at this point, or if there's any later changes, but the last information I had is that I don't think anyone thinks we can get through this fiscal year without some additional transfusion in cash or some problem in terms of getting our full reimbursement, and that's getting through this current fiscal year, federal fiscal year 2009. And I'll talk about this in just a little bit more detail a little later in my comments when I talk about ASHTO's recommendations for reauthorization. But, you know, before we can even talk about this brand new program we want and all of this additional money, because it's so important to make investments in things we know are going to matter, you know, quite frankly, 2010 could be a disaster for all of us, absent any new revenues into the Highway Trust Fund, because we can't even stay constant with the spending we have today. The reduction in funding could be as much as 50 to 60% in 2010. If you're at all familiar with the way monies flow out of the Highway Trust Fund and sort of the timing of all of that, what's likely to happen absent any new funding into the trust fund is that we'll have a huge drop-off in 2010. We'll come back up in 2011 and 2012, but not as high as we did in, say, 2008 or 2009. So absent new dollars, we can't even stay even with where we had been, and where we have been is not where we need to be as a nation. So before we talk with Congress about authorization, we've got to talk to them about stabilizing the funding in the Highway Trust Fund, and I have thought for some time it's will be an irony, I think, in the midst of recovery funds and, you know, rushing to spend dollars to really get our economy moving, if we turn around and we're faced with having declining sources of revenue in 2010 that will increase our funding in 2009 and plunge. It doesn't seem to me that Congress would allow that situation to develop, but there aren't easy solutions to fixing it either. One of the other things that we've been confronted with, and over time it's becoming more nettlesome, is this issue of recessions, rescissions. And I'm probably not talking to a room of transportation programmers or planners, so you may not be as familiar, but when Congress authorizes the transportation program, They do it through authorization, and then every year they set obligation limitations. So we never get to spend all of the money we were authorized to spend. And over time, we get these balances that develop, sort of on paper, if you will. And what Congress has been doing is they've been eliminating those out-year balances. Well, my attitude to it, quite frankly, originally is like, you know, so what, it's on paper, we were never going to spend it anyway. Well, one of the problems is that they continue to do these decisions is now we no longer have balances in all the categories where we need them. So some states might have a lot of bridge money, but they may not have money in their interstate. They might not have balances in their interstate program. And so we've gotten to the place that with additional decisions, it's really going to start affecting our ability to move forward. It won't result in outright cuts in projects. It's certainly going to start affecting what projects we can program. There's an $8.7 billion rescission scheduled to take place this year, and one of the things ESCO is working to do is to talk Congress out of making that rescission and rolling it back, and I think that that's more important than many people realize, and so that's an issue that we're very hopeful we can get addressed. So, you know, that brings us to the challenges and the needs that need to be addressed in the next urban transportation bill. And while I think that there are a number of reforms which are absolutely critical, and if you follow some of the dialogue, I forget the numbers, but the first commission that looked at transportation drew the conclusion that, you know, there are hundreds of individual programs in the transportation, under the transportation umbrella, and what we need to do really is get back to some core set of programs, and I think that's absolutely key. But today what I want to talk about more, though, is just the overall dollars and our need really to pay attention to the dollars. As I said, if we don't do something about 2010, we're not even going to be able to keep spending at a constant level, and what we know is that that constant level is good. I mean, to start with, the reality is that the current levels don't still buy what they used to buy. That's an inevitable thing that happens to us in transportation because our revenue sources tend not to grow very much while, of course, our costs do. But when you look at the hyperinflation that we went through for a period of time that currently is in abeyance, that, you know, could be back, what you really see is that we're nowhere near today buying the amounts of asphalt or concrete or the number of miles or the amount of steel or whatever else it is that you want to think about that we used to be able to buy. So just to give you some facts around that, it's estimated that between 1993, which was the last time the motor fuels tax was raised, and I always like to make the point that at that time when it wasn't raised for transportation, it was raised for deficit reduction. We later were able to capture those dollars, which was very helpful to us, but the dialogue in Congress wasn't about raising motor fuels tax to solve the transportation problem. It was about raising motor fuels tax to solve the deficit problem. The last time motor fuels was raised specifically to deal with transportation was when Ronald Reagan was president, just to put in perspective how long ago that's been. But back to the point, if you look at the last time motor fuels was raised in 1993, and project out to 2015, which would likely be the last year of this new authorization if we ever get it going, construction costs will have increased by 80% over that period of time from 1993 to 2015. So in order to simply restore the purchasing power back to where we were in 1993, we would have to increase our spending by $43 billion. From 43 billion in 2009 to 75 billion by 2015. So huge increases, and what we're really doing is restoring what we could do back in the 90s, not necessarily expanding the program in the way we know we need to expand it. There have been two national commissions, and you know, hopefully you've followed or read some of those. The most recent commission, and it's very confusing. You know, we had two national commissions studying transportation, not quite at the same time, but close, slightly different missions, but not entirely different missions. But ultimately, I think it has been useful. The first national commission, people have tended to refer to it more as the policy commission, and the last commission is just reported as the revenue commission. And if you haven't seen their report, I think it's called paying our way. Does anybody know? Does that sound right? I can see the cover in my face, but I can't quite think of the name of it. I thought it was an excellent report. I've heard a couple of presentations on it. I'd have to confess I've not read the full report, but they've got a great executive summary on it. I think it's excellent. But the point of all of this is both of those studies came to roughly the same conclusion, which is that, you know, we need in our nation to be spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 billion annually on transportation, and we're nowhere near to that level. So the financial goals of trying to stabilize the trust fund, restore purchasing power, and then look at how we can really start making progress in terms of creating a more integrated, functioning transportation system in our country. The economic challenges of doing that are absolutely huge, as you could well imagine. And so in looking at its program and its proposals, ASHTO has made a number of recommendations in terms of where we believe as an organization the funding needed to be. And besides maintaining and increasing funding to more of what we've thought of as our core highway and transit programs, ASHTO has also recommended a new program for freight and a new program for intercity passenger rail, which I think are absolutely key and essential for our country as we try to move forward. You know, some have used the term that we're actually at the initial stages of a freight crisis in our country, and I don't think that's too strong a language. I think that's exactly right. We have highways, railroads, ports, waterways, airports, all requiring investments well beyond the investments that we're making today and that we've been able to make. And I just don't see how our country really moves forward economically if we don't create a national freight system that connects all of the sectors of our economy, all of our regions, and connects us to the national and the international markets. And, you know, we've just got to be more attentive. The argument that we've tended to have among the states that every time authorization comes up tends to revolve more around, you know, our fair share and donor and donee issues. And, you know, we've got to move beyond that and start focusing on, you know, what matters to our nation and how do we make investments. And, you know, I know I'm asking for almost the impossible because we're human beings, and, you know, we probably won't accomplish this in Kansas either, nor will I be able to do it. But sometimes, you know, the issue isn't so much, you know, what is our fair share to spend inside our state borders, but are we spending our national dollars in a way that enhances the ability for our businesses, our agriculture, our manufacturing firms to thrive? And I've often said that it may be as important to spend money at ports for Kansas agriculture as it is for us to spend money inside our boundaries, but we get so focused on whether or not we're getting the money to spend on our own systems that I think we oftentimes lose sight of the big picture. So, you know, here's the bottom line in terms of the national program. I mean, ASHTO's recommendations in order to sustain the federal highway program and the transit program, to restore the purchasing power, and then to begin, and I think begin is the operable word, to make investment in the national freight system and in the intercity passenger rail system, has recommended the following spending levels to Congress. First is to fund the highway program at $375 billion between 2010 and 2015, and that would allow its annual level to reach $75 billion by 2015. Now, that's just for the highway side. And then ASHTO has recommended that there be a new freight program funded at $42 billion, but from resources outside of the Federal Highway Trust Fund. And I think that it's imperative for our nation that we start moving to this notion of a standalone freight program that can really start addressing some of these bottleneck issues. But the notion of coming up with revenue sources outside the state highway fund will be challenging, and we shouldn't kid ourselves about that. Easy to say the words, a lot harder to come up with a solution. The recommendation on the transit side is for $93 billion, and once again, that's really for our more traditional transit programs. And then what ASHTO has recommended is that there should be a new intercity passenger rail program funded at $35 billion, and that should also be funded from resources that come from outside the Highway Trust Fund. So increase our core highway and core transit programs inside the trust fund, really pretty much in terms of the relationship they're funded today, and create two new and important programs, one for freight, one for intercity passenger rail, but looking for new sources of funding that can come from outside the highway trust fund. And of course, you know, as I said, hard enough to get to agreement in terms of what our formula would be. Okay, then try to find the agreement on how we're going to fund those things out of revenue sources. And there aren't any easy ways, that's for sure. And we're talking in Kansas about where we need to go with the new transportation program and funding for the program. And you know, that's not an easy discussion to have either. And what we've really said is that really nothing can be off the table, and we've got to start thinking about our revenue sources a little bit differently. Well, that's certainly true for Congress as well. There's a menu of options that AASHTO as well as other national organizations are laying out, and I think that Congress is going to have to look at a wide list, and furthermore, they're going to have to pull together quite a mix of revenue sources. Some of the kinds of things that we've recommended of staying with our traditional sources, increasing motor fuels and diesel fees, but also looking at the notion of sales taxes, carbon taxes, freight charges of various kinds. Of course, the notion of a VMT tax was recommended more strongly really by the Revenue Commission, but discussion of it came out of the other commission as well. And when you look at the range of options, it feels like that's the most valid one, but it certainly creates its own set of issues as well. It's not going to solve all of our funding problems by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's going to cause some other issues. I think it's interesting when we talk about a user fee, if we go to a VMT tax, where you're very clearly paying for every mile you travel, then I think it raises the question, if that's the way you're funding the highway trust fund, how do you feel then about funding transit out of that trust fund based on a VMT tax? I think it raises some of those issues. But it certainly seems like that would be a way to go. One of the strong messages that not only our organization, but quite frankly, a number of the national organizations is making is that historically, if you look at it, as the total spending of transportation in the nation falls out, the federal government made about 45% of that investment, 55% has come from state and local government. And a strong recommendation is that as we move forward, every level of government maintain its commitment to their percentage share. So we're calling on Congress to maintain a commitment to 45%, but as we ask Congress to raise the amount of money that we're spending in their 45%, that's going to put additional pressure on us as states and then local governments to raise what we're doing in order to match it. And of course, to get to the levels of dollars we need to be spending, it's going to take commitment from all three levels of government. I don't know what's going on in your state, but I can just tell you, well, there's enthusiasm and interest around transportation, strong support. Quite frankly, I feel like we've got a great working relationship with our state legislature. They see the value of transportation, but man, you start talking about tax increases and it becomes a really different conversation. So the reality, I think, not only of trying to move Congress, but then having to also move our state legislators, in some cases county commissioners, city councilmen, everything we need to do really to break what we're doing in freight is not going to be an easy thing. But it's what we're going to have to try to do. So I'm going to delay those issues out, and I'm not really watching the time period here later, and I'm not quite sure what time we have, but I'd be happy to take questions, initiate a dialogue, just get some conversation going on those issues, if that works for you all.
That sounds good. Any questions for Dan? Well, let me start then. Actually, there's a long-dating relationship with the federal role. They sent you the state price issue, and yet they also are now saying that we want to scrub the federal role to create that vision and so on. How do you see that playing out, and how does
AASHTO manage that effect? Well, I'm gonna stick from my own perspective, at least I get in trouble. And, I would say I'm not sure that my view my view, I don't think necessarily represents AASHTO, and I'm not sure that I would get firm agreement from my fellow CEOs from around the country. But I think the truth of the matter is we need to face this as states, that while we have a strong state system in our country generally, not just around transportation, and our methodologies, the stimulus dollars, when the mayors were making a big push to try to get the stimulus dollars spent through the city, I didn't think that was going to happen just from a practical standpoint all of our billing mechanisms and our relationships and our accounting systems are set up to flow from the federal government to the state government. And when you want to move quickly and ensure that there's no fraud or graft or corruption or whatever, you know, use the system that you've got. So, you know, that's the way we're set up. But I've got to tell you, I don't think the way to solve all of the transportation problems, maybe some of them, is to solve them with federal programs that flow through states and only through states. It's not that we don't work cooperatively. That's what this meeting is all about. But the reality is when it comes right down to it, it's hard for any of us to do anything but advocate for more money for our state. We get driven by the priorities of our state legislature, by a city mayor, by our governor, or whatever, and that's just $10 inside our state. And it's not necessarily to do the thing that's the most important to really make our national system function. And I don't think that flowing the dollars through state DOTs is ever going to get the right answer, particularly when we're talking about these freight issues. If we want to talk about how to relieve bottlenecks and how to make freight flow better, faster, more efficiently, many of those things are either outside the purview of the state DOT, or as I said, what might be most important, quite frankly, for business or agricultural interest in Kansas might be something that they do at the Port of Catoosa, or it might be something that happens in L.A., and it's hard for us to make those decisions. So, personally, I think that one of the reasons we've gotten behind on what we need to do in our nation is because we don't have a strong enough federal role, which then means we don't have strong enough federal commitment and we don't have strong enough federal capacity. And I think in order to really create that business, you just flat have to have a stronger federal role. And if you have a stronger federal role, it almost invariably means there's some diminishment of the state role. And I think from a national standpoint, that's worth it. But I'm not sure I would get agreement, as I said, from my other CEOs. And I think really that's an excellent question. I mean, you have summed up exactly as an organization, because we defend our own territory, you know, we argue very aggressively for state authority and state independent decision making, but, you know, I'm not sure we think to the best answer for solving some higher level transportation needs. And I think we are likely, I'll just go there, I think we are likely to see some diminishment, because I think that there will be some level of focus, whether it's through a standalone freight program like that's just recommended or whatever, where those dollars are likely to not flow through state DOTs. And so I think it's going to start changing that dynamic. You know, how do you create a good high-speed rail network in the nation, designed to serve the nation, if all of those decisions are being made inside, you know, the boundaries of a state? I just don't see how you get to the right answer.
You talked about the reauthorization of the highway trust fund, but I want to direct your comments to the state of finances for Kansas and matching the funds like you mentioned. We have a situation in 2010 that we won't be able to match $500 million federal funds as they currently exist, so there's a crisis.
Right.
Like, how do we deal with that?
Yeah, well, it's an excellent question. I mean, you know, certainly the state of Kansas, today we still have sufficient monies to match, but we're to the place in our program is starting to change our priorities. We're having to either use more federal dollars for more sort of preservation-focused things than we would have done in the past, or not do as much preservation-focused work, because we don't have enough money to spend our state dollars on the kind of preservation work as we used to do and think we should do it, and natural federal funds are, to keep your point. You know, one of the issues that has been argued by states at some point in time is that it can be so hard to move your state legislators to raise taxes is that you almost need that external issue of leaving federal dollars on the table to compel them to move. And, you know, sooner or later, I think that's the situation we're all going to end up in. There's going to be money on the table in absence of some action by state legislators to raise state dollars. We're not going to be able to fully utilize or leverage the federal dollars. But I don't think in Kansas they're quite ready to move in that direction, and I suspect they're not ready to do that in Michigan either. I tell people in our own state that when we talk about transportation, I'm sort of long-term optimistic, because I really am. I think that, it feels like there's a renewed recognition of the tie between transportation and the economy. And I think there's enough dysfunction starting to move into the system that it's beginning to hit businesses that what they're trying to accomplish can't be done because the transportation system won't support it. So long term, I'm optimistic about the direction we're going to head and that there will be additional focus in revenue and transportation. But short term, I think there's going to be a lot of chaos. And we're not going to be able to meet our goals. And I'm not sure when I say long term and short term how many years I'm talking about. You know, short term, I don't think it's a year, and I hope it's not more than five. But, you know, I just don't think, I have never thought we're just going to move right forward to a new authorization. And if we did, I don't think it's an authorization we're going to want. And I think, and I have to eat these words, I would rather continue to go through some chaos to get to a good, solid bill authorized at a high enough level. But I think we're all going to have some really bad years financially between here and there. So you had a question?
I believe our equivalents are equivalent to this group at Hanba. You know, Kathleen Nichols with our DMV is working on getting the Mississippi Valley states together on the OSOW, the Oversight Valley. And then Minnesota and Wisconsin are in a collaborative effort as well on that issue and many others. And so for this group, I would point to that effort as kind of a to start that process here. And I think one of the concerns that the group had with using the other examples that we've watched over there, the envelopes that all the states can agree to the size, weight, blank, height, are not the envelopes that I think the industry is looking for.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a reduced attraction to the permit in volume to the other permits that we've been seeking before that being held.
Well, I've been surprised for some time, and, you know, I suspect at least now it's not yet going any place that, you know, a bill was introduced and we had a lobbyist to meet with us to kind of give us a heads up that we had Kansas businesses participating, and that was to, well, as I recall, Leo, you can correct me, I think the bill introduced doesn't raise size or weight, but allows states to raise them on the interstate if they choose to.
They offer.
And I've been surprised for some time that that issue hasn't much more aggressively gotten put on the national agenda, because one, size and weight issues have been frozen for so long, and two, you know, while there's some trade-offs and certainly creates some issues for us who are trying to manage the infrastructure on the network, you know, I suspect you can see some enormous gains from going to longer and different combinations. And so I think the point you make that, you know, one, our envelopes are different than the Western states, that two, our current envelopes aren't what industry is seeking, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they're not going to be the envelopes that we're going to see being legalized at some point in time in the future.
Yeah, I think the wind industry
is
kind of setting the tone for circumventing the 7,000-day law by pre-manufacturing.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, and actually this may not, you know, when we look at the Mississippi Valley states, this may not be an issue for the rest of you all, but, you know, much to my amazement, as I always thought of cotton as just being this very southern thing, you know, we're growing a lot of cotton in Kansas now, and so like I said, you may not be safe with this. I don't know, I've never quite gotten it, but cotton modules, which is, you know, in my mind, you know, a bale of cotton and the trailers that they manufacture designed to pick up these cotton modules are heavier and are lighter than our requirements. And then, you know, we get visited by the industry and legislators that say, well, we don't know what your problem is, Kansas, because, you know, this is what we're using in Texas. This is what we're using in Oklahoma. And I keep thinking, you know, isn't it so not the same for everybody? And wasn't it out there? And why did you manufacture a trailer? But exactly, and the wind stuff has been exactly right. And, yeah, I mean, you know, really, I think from the standpoint of Kansas, you know, we're one of those plains-draped states kind of right in this wind tunnel or whatever. I think that's going to be good for us economically, and we work very hard to be a good partner in the state, but, you know, I'm telling you, we're not, you can't get in front of anybody saying, no, we're not going to permit wind blades. When they're moving through the state, that is just not acceptable. And you are exactly right. They're already changing it sort of outside the legal structure, just in reality.
Okay.
Dave Christensen, new doc. On the issue of BNP taxation versus fuel tax, do you think that fuel taxation is really a dead horse at this point, and that BNP is the way of the future? Because obviously we're having that same debate in our state, most states are having it. It seems like there are issues, even our environmental people are arguing both sides of what they would like to see a BNP tax. Of course, more people and fewer vehicles.
Right, right.
Transit and carpooling. At the same time, we might have higher fuel taxes to reduce the use of hydrocarbons.
Yeah, I think I think the debate in its own way, you know, if it didn't affect where we live so significantly, it really becomes a sit back and watch. The other thing I found interesting, you know, this is certainly not the way I come at the issue, but I found it really interesting. I started to see in some of the literature people saying, you know, we can't go to a BMT tax because then there's no incentive to go to higher mileage cars. You know, you're taking all of our incentive away from us. And I don't know, you know, I guess I can kind of get that too, but you know, when you get right down to it, if your only incentive for going to a higher vehicle, a BMT vehicle, is because of the tax, you know, I don't think you're very good at math, but, you know, that's a whole other story. I don't know for sure. I mean, I think, because it seems so rational to me, that the motor fuel tax is a thing of the past and might start becoming a thing of the past even quicker than we anticipate, and that BMT is the direction of the future. You know, by the same token, there are a lot of impediments to move in that direction, which to me all feel like they're manageable, but I'm not sure in the broader political system they're that manageable. Privacy issues, of course, is a big one that sticks out there, I think. And once again, if you're interested, the Revenue Commission, I thought, did some pretty good thinking around this. And they've got some good information in their report about, you know, how you might start moving forward to deal with the privacy issues. But when we have the technology we have today that allows us so simply, in some ways, to track BMT, when we're going to have a wide range, I think, of vehicles on the road. I mean, I always say to people, yesterday, Joe Tuohl from the Federal Highway Administration, if any of you all know Joe Tuohl, we're having our energy, our engineering conference right now at Kansas State University. It was yesterday and it's today, and Joe spoke. And one of the things he said, if you know Joe, he's a great speaker and he's really funny, he said, how many SUV drivers, pickup truck and SUV drivers do we have out there? You know, don't be shy, raise your hand. You know, quite frankly, in this audience, it was a lot. You know, I've got 80% of the audience raised their hand, and he said, I just want to tell you, thank you, because you all are the ones that are keeping our highway trust fund alive. So, you know, keep it up. And one of the things I always thought is an irony, you know, unless we're talking really heavy vehicles, it's interesting to me that people don't think of it this way, because I don't know that a Prius has any less impact on the system than an Explorer. But if you're driving that Explorer, you're paying more money in motor fuel tax. And so the notion to me of going to this BMT tax that just gives you so many opportunities to induce certain kinds of behaviors also just feels so much fairer. So it just seems like it should be the direction of the future, but I don't know. It's interesting to me. I've had the opportunity now to be before a couple of different congressional committees when this issue comes up, and for one thing, everything else, whatever else is on the agenda, this is the only thing they ask questions about, and they're all skeptical and critical, if you understand what I mean. I mean, not hostile, but pretty skeptical and you know, a little on the critical side. So it's not going to be a cakewalk, but it feels like it's the right thing to do.
Our proponents of alternative fuels, then some people would be kind enough to suggest that we need a minimum price per gallon, $4 to change the behavior. I don't know if you have
was really interesting. A Kansas state legislator who lives in a border community had been reading some literature about Fed, and he's a nice guy, been helpful and supportive though, but pretty conservative, you know, in terms of how he approaches taxing issues. And I thought it was interesting because he thought that was a great idea, which really surprised me. The reason he thought it was a great idea is he liked the notion that you would just have some level tax and we just get rid of, you know, you pay more or less in Missouri or Oklahoma or wherever else. I always tell people, you know, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your damn border state. Because, you know, is anybody else still here from Missouri? He like, must have known where I was headed because he slipped away, you know. Where's your tax, you know? Oklahoma and Missouri are the bane of our existence on the taxing side because they are so significantly lower, it's really hard to have dialogue about anything we want to do on the taxing side. But at any rate, I don't think you're going to see a political body do that either. I just don't think they're going to do it. I can see, you know, rationally some logic to it, but I don't think they'll do it.
One of the topics that the fact that as part of the reauthorization has touched on is this whole notion of performance management, accountability.
Yeah.
How do you come down on that?
You know, I just think that this is another thing that's interesting too, generational, I guess, because generally speaking, I would say sort of the current crop of CEOs at state DOT, I think, strongly favor it and believe it's the right direction to go. And if you went back 10 years ago, you would have heard a completely different message. And it's not that there aren't legitimate issues around the fact that as much as we're alike, you know, we all have such differences that it really is hard to compare. But I think the notion that we can't compare ourselves to each other because it's not going to be fair, or Kansas is going to look bad because our interstate payment's in bad shape, but that's because of this issue or that issue, I mean, I just think that's crazy. I don't think we can, I don't think we should feel comfortable making that statement to ourselves. As the head of the state DOT who came in with no experience, like say in the maintenance area, I kind of came out of the planning world, and so like I wanted to know, you know, how we made decisions about how we set our maintenance levels, and how do we know that's the right level, and what are they doing in other states, and of course immediately my staff said, oh no, you can't compare to other states. So, I mean, that just wouldn't be valid. That wouldn't be valid. And, you know, we're trying to run a national system. You know, how we can't ask Congress or the public to invest more money to create this national system and not give them anything back to say, you know, here's what we're doing to improve it. And, you know, we do all have our own issues. You know, let's face it. Sometimes you need to get, you know, kind of kicked around a little bit because you're not necessarily making the right decision. You're not making the right investment decision. Maybe it's not your state. You know, you're being driven by your state legislature, but still you're not making the right decision in terms of what you need to do for the system. So I think it's really important. I think it will be hard to do as we transition into it, but doable. And I think it's absolutely imperative, and it's clearly where we're going to go. And we need to not be hanging back and having somebody impose it on us. We need to be out leading it. Because one, I think that sends the right signal. Two, I think we'll end up with a better system. And three, I think if we're fully vested in the idea of performance management and performance measures, we'll do a better job. And we'll end up with a system that, quite frankly, is more likely to work than having somebody impose one on us that we're not really participating in and we're fighting against. So, yeah, I think we're definitely headed there. Let me say one other thing about that. I have been struck over time by, you know, it kills me, the simplest, I mean, what seems like the most straightforward things, and I think, you know, it's taken years, but we've made great progress so that we really do have ways we can compare pavement conditions pretty comparably across states. But how many years did it get us so that, you know, we can compare pavement performance? And the reality is, as we move to a more performance-based process, and we're particularly trying to make these comparisons back nationally, it will not be easy, and we will fight against it, but it means we're going to have to change our own internal systems, even naming. You know, I have been struck, I always tell people, we under a program have the names we use for our categories of projects are, quite frankly, completely unnamed, and we're trying to change them as we move forward, but they're laid out in state statutes. So we do something called major modifications, and we do substantial maintenance, and we do system enhancements, and whether you're a major modification or a system enhancement depending on which pot of money you got funded from and you know, sort of how it was selected, it didn't really, it didn't have anything to do with scope. But I always tell people, I mean, I can't even have a conversation with my colleagues and they know what I'm talking about because those names don't mean anything. And one of the things I noticed, one of the reasons we have so much trouble comparing, we've all done this, I know, there's somebody in your case, you say, let's do a survey and find out what other people are doing. And it takes so darn long to try to translate their dollars back to something that's comparable to your dollars, you know, you just give up on it because, you know, you can't make it comparable. So we're going to internally have to change things. We're doing it at our state level so that over time we're moving in ways that what we're doing is comparable with other states, and that's going to be painful, and it's going to require, you know, both spending and flexibility and a willingness to make changes, but I think it's where we actually have to get. It's probably going to take us years to get there, so it's really meaningful, but, you know, we ought to get started.
I just have one more question for you. We had a meeting of the state board last night, and we were talking about trade issues, and we didn't actually take a poll on this, but I think the majority of the state represented expressed concern that their bosses didn't get any credit. John was there, he said, you got it, so, is there something that we as a group, a coalition of professional staff in the coalition, can do to help your counterparts get it? That is important to critics.
I thought you were going to ask for a restaurant recommendation. I was ready for that softball question. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's interesting to me, you know, that you say that. Because, you know, at least from the dialogue, I think I would say that we've had an ASCA Board of Directors meetings and, you know, all the studies that have come down and people have talked about freight. And, you know, I certainly hear my colleagues using that language that we recognize that there's, a, you know, this huge freight and that we're going to have to deal with it. So whether they get it or don't get it, I'm not sure. I know. I do think it's why I say I'm not sure that what I said this morning would be agreed to or supported by some of my colleagues, and that is that I think that we do need a much more engaged federal role in transportation, and that I think we don't always make the best decisions when we just make them, you know, for our state systems. We get too driven by decisions that were made 20 years ago, you know. We've all got that long set of projects that somebody committed to 20, 25 years ago, and they're either just slowly eating away at funding it, or it still hasn't made its way to the top. And so, you know, it's hard to even go back and revisit. Does this really still make sense for our state? You know, I mean, we're still driven by those things. I suspect one of the things that you see in your bosses is just that. It is, there is so much pressure to try to balance and to sort of satisfy, you know, for lack of a better word, and, you know, we use it like a dirty word, which I think is unfortunate, but, you know, sort of the politics in your own state, and I think it makes it really hard sometimes to step out and to say, you know, might have seemed important 25 years ago, but it's not now. So, you know, I suspect you might see some of that with your bosses, and I don't know. You know, change happens so slowly. I think it's not so much just changing the attitude or the knowledge of the folks who are heading up state DOTs. It's, you know, also in some ways bringing along communities, it's just a bigger cultural shift. Because in some ways we get, much as, you know, congressmen do, we could cry earmarks, but still they get evaluated based upon what did they bring back to the state. And, you know, people in my position get evaluated on how effective are they bringing money to their state. You know, not just they do a good job getting money for Michigan, because really that was going to make it better for all of us, you know. That's a pretty tough sell when you're in these jobs. I think some of that takes over. I don't know. I mean, is that just like dinner conversation? Do you feel like generally this notion that the role of freight, that, you know, it, to me it's such a linchpin in terms of what we need to do with transportation. You don't feel like that's a sense that you don't have to remember what state you're from.
Well, I mean, based on the funding, you talked about the reauthorization of what you dropped in
the bucket. It is
about like $35 billion versus how much you're spending on highways. So
right.
Like, you draw your own conclusions just from what ASCO is proposing.
Yeah, no, that's legitimate. I mean, you know, we're very quick to protect our legacy system, so to speak. Yeah, I would say, you know, as Leo, you can't take this back to John or anyone else, but I would say that in some ways, you know, I think it's interesting because in some ways for ASCO as an organization, they're like really stepping out to recommend a national freight system and an intercity passenger system. But you make a good point, you know, the size of them is nowhere near the need, and certainly the way the recommendation is laid out is very secondary to the other needs on the system. So, you know, state DOTs weren't ready to go too far out there on that limb, you know, supporting change.
I'm going to object. By coming over here, I apologize for this, but I turned the Chief Buffalo on and said, goddamn idiot. I just called that a kind of support.
He said it's staying here.
I'm going to talk tomorrow morning, and I will make quite the opposite. That the agile trade proposals are very substantial. Complete break with past in ASCO. And viewed by the freight industry community in Washington as really being a rallying point, and several of those organizations have potentially adopted the ASCO. So I would elaborate on that.
I think that, you know, he raised your efforts, right? In terms of the scale of the money, that was my point.
What do you say about that, Leo? I mean, the scale of the money.
$35 billion is 6 years with passenger rail. Now, that is $35 billion proposed by ASCO for intercity passenger rail, and it's not Amtrak. It's for capital spending by states on passenger railroads. That compares with zero.
Yeah.
The freight proposal is in two major pieces, $42 billion over 6 years, half of which would be national decision making, half of which would be state, and then within, and that's outside of the traditional highway trust fund arrangement. So within the trust fund, and that's states basically doing something they don't like to do. They're saying they're proposing a large sum of money that the USDOT will make decisions about on a discretionary basis. Within the Highway Trust Fund, a state freight program, $18 billion over 6 years, that would require a freight plan. Again, a very tough choice. By the DOT directors, they don't like to create new programs. They don't like what they decided. Yes, this is important. We want to instead, in states, a responsibility that is clear for the freight and then will carry with it an obligation then to plan for freight.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that now I don't have to
talk to
them. You know, when I talk to freight people, you know, you say, well, you know, this is a little bit for freight, this is a lot for highways. Well, you know, depending on any measure, 60 to 80% of freight moves
on highways, yeah. That's
right. Yeah. You've got a mixed use infrastructure. If you look at major freight fuel points on highways, they are fuel points for passenger as well as for freight. But the problem currently is that states don't calculate the freight element of those investments, either in terms of, you know, benefit, performance, and so you don't incorporate it into planning, and then you don't get credit for the achievements.
You're saying we're already in the freight, we shouldn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
So I object strenuously
to the description. Well, I have a challenge to say that we need a better marketing effort to put them across. And I think it's a serious question we have yesterday. We have many people in Creighton going through education. So I think we're going to do one of the DOT that they can understand Creighton. So that's the challenge to me.
That's a good point. I mean, you know, I think the United States get caught up into it too, when it feels like you need to move much more aggressively. And, you know, our organizational response tends to lag. But Leo makes a really good point for an organization like ESCO, which represents state DOTs who have a vested, you know, interest in maintaining sort of like state systems and state superiority or whatever. I didn't perceive a lot of pushback even. I mean, you know, the recommendations were developed over time, but it's not like there were, fight to the death sort of arguments over we can't send all this money over here. So that probably does speak out of the organization. But the other thing I would say, I made this point a couple of times to my colleagues, and I never get to the with them, but, you know, I said at the outset, we spent years talking about creating a vision for transportation that would get people excited. And I, you know, people say we need to remember, you know, the interstate system that really got people vested in transportation. But I have thought for some time that the issues that will get people vested in transportation is intercity passenger rail. I think people will get very excited about the notion of creating a network inside our country that will get them more interested in talking about transportation. And I think that you could say the same for some of those freight issues. Now, you know, some of this kind of internal, and that people may not see it, but you know, they're frustrated with trucks on interstates or the roadways, the notion of truck only lanes in certain corridors, more grade separation structures enhancing safety. I mean, I think people really care about those things, and I think there is a way to market those issues that will help people get excited about transportation again. And you know, important though it is, and expensive though it is, maintaining our existing systems, it just is never going to capture the public's imagination. But I think the intercity passenger rail issues and some of these great issues have the potential to capture them. And we, as transportation advocates who want people to care about it, I think we should use those issues more than we have today.
Absolutely.
Well, he doesn't, and I know he doesn't.
Thank you.